Well, for those of you in the audience who weren't teenagers in the 80s or 90s, that's probably just a few of you. Well, for those of you that weren't teenagers in the 80s or 90s, I should perhaps begin by explaining that Slim once worked with one of the biggest rock bands from that era, a band called Nirvana, who had a famous lead singer named Kurt Cobain. And Cobain, sadly, it committed suicide in 1994. And I remember that I was a senior in high school at that time, and it motivated me to actually write an article in our school newspaper about the warning signs of potential suicide or suicide prevention. But before that tragic turn in Nirvana and Kurt Cobain's life, Cobain was this larger-than-life figure and had become quite significant in our popular culture. And Slim worked with him and his band in the early days, and even lived in a duplex with Cobain for a while. And you have these great stories about Cobain. And one of them in particular I thought would be a really fitting metaphor for us as a church and for people of faith. And it's the story about Cobain's turtles. And it unfolds into a larger story. And I can't even remember why you happened to be watching after Cobain's turtles. So if you could tell us that story.
Well, first, though, I want to say thanks. It's great to be here, and it's been great to be able to volunteer here, and so I want to say thanks to you, Brooks, and thanks to the council, and especially to Joan and Ken and Alice, who kind of checked me out before I started here. And, you know, it's funny, because that story is just barely about Kurt Cobain, but I wanted to kind of give it a little backdrop in that I moved to Olympia, Washington in 1986 because I went to college there, but I picked that college because I knew there was great music happening in that town and that there were great bands in that town. I moved to that town, and over the next 20 years, lots of other young people moved to Olympia also to make music or to be part of the music scene there. So Kurt Cobain was one of many who moved there in the 80s. He moved to Olympia from Aberdeen, and most of us who got involved with music, who came there for that music, all knew each other, and so we formed a community. And not everybody was a musician. Some people were just fans, or they liked to write about music, or they liked to do art. And so there was just this vibrant music community in Olympia. And so I knew many musicians that I thought were really wonderful. Kurt was one of many very talented musicians. But the story is that when Nirvana's second album came out, Nirvana went on tour, because that's how you do it. You put out a record and then you go on tour to support the record so that people can see your band, and then maybe if they like the band, they go out and buy the record. And when they went on tour, his hobby was to collect turtles, and he had a whole bunch of turtles, and he had to have somebody look after him, so he brought them to my office, and my office was in an apartment, and so we had a bathtub that nobody used because nobody actually lived in the apartment, so we put the turtles in the bathtub. But then Nirvana suddenly became super, 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 super famous while they were on that tour. They started selling millions of records, and Kurt never came home for his turtles, so the turtles... So the turtles lived in the bathtub for years after that. And so that's the story of how we came to get the turtles. But the story that you're referring to is I had a band called Refect Refect, and one day we were going to put out a 7-inch, and which is, you know, for those of you who are old enough might remember vinyl records.
What are those?
yeah. It's an older technology. But we were going to put out a vinyl 7-inch record, and we needed a cover photo. So my partner in the band organized a photo shoot with a photographer that I'd never met. And she was just a young woman our age, early 20s. And we met in Portland, and we brought the turtles because we were going to shoot this interesting photo shoot of the turtles as if they were giants knocking over little green plastic army men. But we also had to take a band photo, and we were walking around a Portland neighborhood, and I just started talking to the photographer and asking her about her life and finding out that what she did, photography was just a side thing for her, but her real passion was putting on these one-woman shows that she had started doing in high school, where she'd write all the parts, but then she'd play all the different characters. And instead of putting them on in theaters, she would put them on in music venues, like opening for punk rock bands. So you'd watch a loud, angry punk rock band, and then you'd watch Miranda do her one-woman show, playing all these parts and talking to herself, and then you'd watch another loud, angry punk band. And the way she was describing it, I thought it sounded so neat. I just said to her, I want to put out your record. But she didn't do records. She didn't do spoken word or poetry or anything, but I was just like, you need to record something that I can put out on an album. And so she did. She found somebody to record her. She wrote a radio play. She put out a radio, basically what is a radio play on my record label. And then she put out another radio play, and then she started doing her thing where she would take her one-woman show out and open for bands all over the country and then in Europe. And then she figured out how to start doing it in art galleries. And then somehow she pieced together the financing to put to film a movie. And then her movie went to the Cannes Film Festival and won an award. And her name is Miranda July, and she's become a well-known movie director. But I guess the point of the story, though, was that sometimes just magic things can happen, because you just hear somebody talk and you go, you're incredible, I want to work with you.
When I hear your stories, they resonate a lot with me, with our scriptures, actually, for today. Both of the scriptures list these gifts that people had in the early Christian community. And what's interesting in the first one is it lists these gifts that range from teaching to generosity. But before it lists those gifts, it says that, you know, there's this problem of people thinking too highly of themselves. And the antidote to that problem then is to recognize and appreciate other people's gifts. And what I sense from you is that your gift is actually to find other people's gifts and to recognize and appreciate other people's gifts, that you've done that over the years in discovering music talent and in discovering this poet who and performer whose movies I've seen her, you know, trailers for in the theater. And so it's sort of like your gift is to be able to find the gem amid the rubble. Not that the rest of us are really rubble, but but you lift it up so that we can appreciate the beauty and the magic and the color of it. And you've got another story about discovering talent that begins with, I believe it's a band that was originally called Giant Henry, but became Unwound. And that story also unfolds into a larger story that I think has some interesting significance to it with regard to the music festival in Olympia. So if you could tell that story as well.
Well, thanks, Brooks. I don't know if that's my talent. I don't know if I have a special talent. I think I've been lucky enough to know a lot of talented people, and I've been open-minded enough and just brave enough to put my time and my treasure into helping them. But I don't know if I have a special talent for identifying.
Enough modesty.
Okay. But there was this vibrant music community in Olympia. And I had lived there for 5 years, and I had been in several bands, and I did a lot of spoken word. I was a poet, and I would get up during concerts and talk, and I would organize the spoken word as a performance art. It's kind of like poetry, but it was a little different events. And so I decided to start a record label just to put out poetry 7 inches, to put out spoken word 7 inches. And I definitely wasn't going to put out rock and roll records. There were too many rock and roll record labels already, and it was just too hard and too intimidating. Definitely wasn't going to do that. But one day, I went out to see some friends play, and they had a band called Giant Henry. And most of the bands in Olympia were people like me who had come there for college and started bands. But Jaya Henry was three best friends from Tumwater High School who had been playing music with each other since they were, you know, middle schoolers. And they had a really neat band. And unfortunately, one of them decided that he had to go off to college and they or something, I can't remember. And he quit and they broke up the band. And then a few months later, they couldn't stand it anymore. It was just miserable to not be in a band together. So they started the band again, but they didn't have a name. They wrote all new songs. So I went out that night to see their band play. And I thought they were incredible. The new songs were the greatest thing I'd ever heard. And I was standing there watching, and I thought, somebody has to put out this band's record. And then I started running down the list in my mind. Will this record label put it out? I don't think they will. And will this record label put it out? No, this isn't really the kind of thing they put out. And then, will this record label put it out? And I realized nobody was going to put out their record. So then I decided that I had to do it. So I was going to have to break my rule about no rock and roll records. I was going to have to put out this band. But then I realized nobody's ever heard of them. Nobody's ever heard of my record label. I don't have any money. There's nothing, you know. So then I came up with this scheme. I remembered that a month from that day, there was going to be a music convention in Olympia that a friend of mine was putting on, and that people were being invited from all over the country and all over the world to come to our town and see some of our bands play, but a lot of bands were going to come from all over the country and play. There was going to be 5 days of music, and I thought, what if I put out a compilation of a bunch of bands that are playing that, a bunch of local bands from Olympia and some bands that are playing that festival? Then people would hear Unwound, because I mean, people would hear Jaya Henry or whatever their name is, and they'd buy the record because it'd be a souvenir, and that way they could learn the name of my record label and I could get a start. And I ran up to the singer of the band afterwards, and I told him my whole plan. I was like, I've got this great idea. I'm going to put out your records, and I'm going to put out a compilation. We're going to sell it at the convention. And then we all went home. I went to bed. I got up the next morning, and I thought, 30 days, no money, this isn't going to happen. It was a great idea, but I should have thought of it 6 months ago. And so I decided, it was a pipe dream. It's over. And then a few minutes after I woke up, I got a phone call. And the guy who was putting on the convention, Calvin Johnson, called, and he said, Slim, so are you going to put out this compilation record or what? And I said, no, Calvin, I can't do it. I don't have any money. It's 30 days away. It takes a couple months to put out a record. And he said, well, why don't you come over, and we'll talk about it. So I came over to his studio, and he called up Jad Fair in Texas, and he called up the Melvins in San Francisco, and he called up Nation of Ulysses in Washington, D.C. Then he handed me the phone, and I called Bratmobile in Washington, D.C., and Bikini Kill in Washington, D.C., and I called Nirvana in Seattle. And within a couple hours, we had 14 bands committed to the compilation. And with no discussion of the business dealings or how I was going to pay them or anything. And then, Chris Novoselic, the bass player from Nirvana, drove down from Seattle and brought a song, and everybody else FedExed their songs. And the new band, the new version of Jaya Henry, didn't even have a song recorded, so Calvin took him to his studio that day and recorded him in his basement. And then they had to make up a name for their band that day because they didn't even have a name, and so they decided to call themselves Unwound. And then we realized, oh no, we still have a problem. It takes 2 months to print record covers. What are we going to do? And then my friend Tanuvial, I started telling my friends about this problem, and then my friend Tanuvial said, well, I can silkscreen them. So then we figured out that this company who made the plastic baggies that 7 inches go and makes the plastic baggies that comic books go in also made blank record covers. Like if the jacket to your 12-inch to your album got damaged, you could buy a blank one to store your record in. And so we bought 1,000 of those blank record jackets, and Tanuvial spent the next month in her basement silk screening one color and silk screening all day, and then hanging up all over her basement on clotheslines. And then after a couple, you know, she'd get 25 hung up, and after a couple days they'd dry, and she'd get them back down, and she'd silk screen the second cover, and she'd hang them up, and she silk screened 1,000 record jackets in 30 days, and then the records got printed in California and shipped back to us. And then the first day of the music festival, 30 days later, we had 20 young punk rockers sitting around on the floor of her basement, stuffing record covers into the silkscreen record covers, and writing number one of 1,000, number two of 1,000, number three of 1,000 in the lower corner on the back. And I had no money. So I should have told this a little earlier in the story. But the other thing is, when a friend of a friend of a friend who had never met me, who lived in Yakima, heard about the compilation and loaned me $2,000 to make it all possible. And so it was amazing. Just in 30 days, it all came together just from everybody just really wanted to make it happen.
That's a wonderful story. Hey, if you want to... Well, when I hear that story, it makes me think also of our second scripture for today, which has a verse in it that says, to each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. And it's really a story about people in a community pulling together and each one bringing their gifts together to make this project happen. There's this contagious excitement as people hear the idea and want to jump on board. And then there's also this ethic of mutual support and cooperation. And so I hear these stories and I think to myself, sounds like there are some similarities between music community and religious community. And you yourself have been in the process of making kind of a transition from the life of the music world to the life of the religious world. I'm wondering what parallels you might see or draw between those two communities and worlds.
Well, it's true that I'm making that transition. I just started going to seminary to Meadville Lombard Theological School, and I want to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. But I was thinking about this question this week, and I realized I'm still learning the language of how to express this. Like, I feel it very deeply that this move from the music community to religious communities is absolutely natural, and that the mutual support that I found in that community in my 20s and in my 30s is exactly like what I find in church. But I'm still struggling with all of the comparisons and the language. I'm still struggling with how to express it. But I know that, I believe that music brings people together. There are truths. I read a book that talked about logos and mythos. And logos is like the kind of knowledge that you'll find in a school textbook that tells you this is how it works. And mythos is another kind of knowledge. There's knowledge that goes beyond just what's in the words. But you know, it's not just feeling, it's knowledge. And music is a way of expressing and experiencing that knowledge, those truths that you can't just put in a textbook. And religion and spirituality is also, I mean, in this way, I think that music is spiritual and spirituality is musical. And we came together in our 20s because of our common love for the music. It was the music that moved us. It was the music that pulled us together. We couldn't even talk to each other about how we felt about the music. We just knew, and it brought us together. But we also cared about the world. We wanted to change the world. We had high-minded political and social goals, and not everybody saw things exactly the same, and not everybody even liked each other. But we always pulled together to make a cool scene, to create concerts, to create events, to have people write about the music, to help bands get shows, to support each other, and that's exactly what happens in church. You know, we don't always all like each other. We don't always see exactly the same way. We all know that we're deeply moved by the experience, but we can't necessarily even find the words to talk about it. But it brings us together in a way that is beyond words. And together we can do great things. You know, I think about this metaphor. With each great band I ever worked with, each person in the band was an incredible person with incredible talents. But when you get three or four people together and they start rehearsing and they start practicing, the music they produce is always so much greater than the sum of the parts. And I feel like that's the same thing that happens in a community is, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 doesn't equal 3, it equals 100, you know?
All right, well, I think that's a powerful way of talking about what a community can accomplish when they're feeling the Spirit and they're all coming together united by a common love. And so I thank you for coming today and sharing those wonderful stories. I wish we had time to share some more. But let's give Slim a round of applause.